Join the Pop Life Podcast conversation. Follow us on Twitter at The Pop Life Podcast. Find us on iTunes at The Pop Life Podcast. Be sure to rate us, please, and find us on SoundCloud and share and like and subscribe. Thanks.
Welcome to the Pop Life Podcast, coming to you from the Crosby Collective Studio, starring your hosts, Jeffrey Sledge, Naima Cochran, and Sean Young. If it's top of mind in pop culture, it's up for discussion. Thank you for joining us this week. The Pop Life begins in 3, 2, 1.
All right, Pop Life Podcast. Today is, it's 6:28.
It is.
Wow, shit.
It is.
I'm taping from the southern city of Atlanta.
Yeah.
But coming home today, actually. I've been here since Tuesday.
Okay.
How you doing?
I'm good. It's hot as shit here.
But
it's okay. Yeah. Like last week the humidity, and earlier this week the humidity was at like 90% or something stupid. So at least it's not that anymore, but it's hot. It's going to be like 95 degrees today, I think.
Oh, because early in the week, the humidity was ridiculous. So the humidity's down a bit.
The humidity went down finally, but yeah, it's hot. Like it was, it was like I had on the wrong shoes yesterday and my feet were hot because the sidewalk was hot, type hot.
And my feet was hot.
You never had that happen? You have on the wrong shoes and the sidewalk is hot, so your feet get hot?
I guess. I don't know. I don't know. I got to think about that.
Happens.
I don't know.
It does happen.
I believe it happens. I'm just saying I don't know. I got to think about that. Okay. I finally broke my bike out. So I rode, I did Central Park last Saturday, I think that was, or Sunday. Mm-hmm. One of the days. Maybe it was Sunday, but whatever. But it was dope. I missed it. I was like, oh man, I missed riding in the park.
And if I remember right, Sunday was a nice day. Sunday was really nice.
It was gorgeous. It was beautiful. It was like beautiful. It was warm, but it wasn't like ridiculous. Like it was warm, you know, say for sure, but it wasn't like crazy. Like it got, you said, with the humidity later in the week. But it was good. It was good. So I'm planning on riding. I think they're saying tomorrow the weather might be a little janky, but Sunday's supposed to be nice. So I'm gonna ride on Sunday. Get back out into the New York summertime. Have you been doing anything like socializing wise?
I mean, social. Yeah, I've been, you know, catching meals and drinks and stuff like that. But I haven't done any summer stage concerts yet, mainly because and that used to be a really big staple for me was hitting Central Park summer stage concerts. But right now, so far, all the ones I've wanted to see are in the outer boroughs.
Yeah.
And also, like, I think I'm still getting used to the fact that it's summer. Like, it kind of snuck up. I feel like it kind of snuck up a little bit.
So once
I get back from Essence, I kind of have a full social calendar. So I'll be out these streets.
Yeah, some things I want to do, too. There's like a Basquiat art exhibit at the Guggenheim.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna hit that. I still always try to go to the, to the Met Gala one at the Met.
Mm-hmm.
That exhibit. So I'm gonna hit that. And then there's a big kind of graffiti, hip hop exhibit called Beyond the Streets.
Uh-huh. Where's that?
That's in Brooklyn. Williamsburg. I think Fab Five Freddie was like the curator for it.
Okay. I think a friend of mine was in town for that. Okay.
Yeah. So that started somewhere. So I want to do a lot of stuff like that. Like I said, definitely hit some concerts. And Q-Tip and Mark Ronson have started spinning again.
Really? Where?
Yeah, they did it's a place called Bon Bon V in Times Square area.
Uh-huh.
So they did one in June. I didn't know what was happening. I missed it. It was actually the same night as something else is going. Oh, it was the same night as the next night after the Songwriters Hall of Fame.
Oh, okay.
It was that Friday, and I was like, "Damn!" So they're supposed to be doing another one sometime in July, and like I said, we'll be at Essence, so that'll be fun.
Yeah. I'm
coming. Yeah, because this is headline.
Shit. I wasn't sure if you. I wasn't sure you hadn't really said nothing. I wasn't sure if you were definitely coming. Oh shit! This is this is your first Essence.
This is my first one.
Oh, nigga.
It's my first one. Yeah, so, you know, obviously, like, it's cool because, with Missy, I'll have all the, be able to move around with the bands and right. You know what I'm saying? So yeah, so now it's good. So it's gonna be fun.
Yeah.
It's gonna be a good time.
Essence is packed. Like, there usually when I go to Essence, usually it's me and Greg and Mom and Mr. Eric, or with Mom and my aunt. And this year I'm kind of going. This year I'm going dolo.
Oh, Mom's not coming.
Mom's not coming. Eric's not coming. And Greg's not coming. It's kind of okay because now, for a long time when I would go down there, like during the day, we would all just be like eating, sleeping at the pool. Whatever. Like, my whole thing during the day was like, I'm going to eat, I'm going to drink, I'm chilling. Now, starting last year, since I'm there as like a quote unquote brand and shit, I gotta actually do
gotta move around.
Socialize. Yeah, you gotta move around. Yeah, so I gotta go to the brunches and the blah blah blah. You know, so it's like I appreciate the opportunity to be able to do that and move in those rooms, but it also really changes what Essence Weekend is for me. Like, it really used to be like, I'm here to be in NOLA and eat and chill and see some shows, and now it's like a networking and see and be seen type thing. But it's fun. But like, these invites, because it's the 25th anniversary, Essence has a lot of new official stuff that they're doing. Like, this year they're doing a House of Fashion, so they have an offsite that's all the panels, everything they're doing there is fashion based, and I think Bev is kicking that off on Wednesday night with a discussion about Dapper and Gucci. Then they also now are doing their own official post-show after parties every night, sometimes two in a night. So, like, it's different little concert lineups and parties hosted by different people. So Essence has ramped up their official events. And then, of course, every year, the unofficial sponsored parties grow more and more. So it's like, it's a lot. It's a full calendar. But I'm excited.
Yeah, I'm excited too, because I've never been, so it'll be my first time, you know, down there for the festival, and just kind of want to just, you know, feel all that black love and that black energy.
Yeah, it's the blackest shit ever. I love it so much.
It's the blackest shit ever, and I'm sure we're going to come back and be talking about all the people we saw in the fashion, the black fashions and the aunties. And
I did want to give one shout, because we haven't done it all month, and it's the end of June. I don't think we've shouted out Pride Month, and I don't think I want to acknowledge just like Stonewall 50, the 50th anniversary of the Stonewall riots, which is the basis for Pride celebration.
So this is actually Pride weekend right here, right?
Yeah. So I just did want to like actually shout that out, at least New York. Yeah.
Yeah. And because I know like last weekend, actually when I rode my bike, maybe that was Saturday, actually. I think it was Saturday. Mm-hmm. Whatever. It was Saturday. So when I was riding my bike, no, it was Sunday. What? I don't know what day it was. You know, I never know what day
it was. You never know what day it was.
I think it was Saturday, though. But what day was that? Because it makes a point of what I'm saying. It was Sunday. It was Sunday because you said the weather was great, and like riding down 8th Avenue in Harlem, for those who don't live here, is kind of like really kind of Harlem's restaurant row.
Right.
You know, there are restaurants on all the avenues, of course, but like there's a bunch of them kind of on 8th Avenue. And it was very like, it felt like it was like Pride last weekend. Like it was like, I mean, not trying to be like funny style, but you could tell it was like a lot of gay cats out. You know, a lot of the restaurants have the rainbow flags up.
Which I feel like they have all month, though.
Yeah, but I mean, it just felt like it was more energy last Saturday. Because actually, I thought Pride Saturday, I was like, oh, this must be Pride weekend last weekend, because it was buzzing like that. And then Storm and Norman DJ, that was Friday night. Yeah, that was Friday night. I was coming home, and he was spinning at that's a place called Harlem Food Bar, which is a gay-leaning restaurant on 8th Avenue. I mean, obviously anybody can go, but they cater to the a large gay contingency, and he was DJing, so it was like a block party,
right?
Because he was like that's DJing like outside. Yeah, there was like people was like dancing like in the streets and shit. So I was just like, oh, so this week I'm saying all that to say that then this weekend is going to really be nuts, because like last weekend was buzzing, so I can imagine like all the events and stuff they're going to have going on. So like, you know, peace to them. I wanted to say a quick shout out to peace to my man DJ Kali Park, who I ran into here in Atlanta. Is like a really good friend of mine. We had kind of lost touch, we hadn't talked in a minute, and it was good to really catch up to him. And another lawyer cat named Carl who I caught up with as well. But Colly Park, for those who don't know, the reason that he popped in my head right during this discussion is because for he's produced a lot of records. He found Soulja Boy.
Okay.
Soulja Boy signed to him. He produced Wait by David Banner.
Okay.
He produced the Whisper Song by Yin Yang Twins.
Okay.
Yeah, Yin Yang Twins was his group, but what he also did was kind of leaning to the Essence Fest thing, a record that he produced that people don't really know. He produced Wobble.
Oh, yeah,
yep.
You should have led with that.
Yeah, he produced the Wobble song, D.I.C., the guy who made the Wobble song, was his artist. And so we were talking about that, and he was like, dude, like, I still get, like, crazy checks from that song.
I was about to ask, like, what kind of royalties is he getting off that shit?
Yeah, of course, I don't ask him what the numbers are, but, like, but he's like, yo, they just keep coming, because this song, it's never ending.
It doesn't end, but I feel like the Wobble isn't something anybody, I guess that's what's interesting to me, because I feel like the Wobble isn't a song that anybody buys. DJs just, because you only really want to play it at events. You don't just, like, play the Wobble in your house.
Yeah, you but know I mean, what I mean? I think he's probably catching money from, like, some streaming sites.
Right.
There are ways now. I think this is still effect. Like, there's a thing, for those who don't know, called Serato. Serato is kind of like
the DJ system.
Yeah, the app, for lack of a better term. It was before apps, but it's kind of a DJ system app that DJs use, like, where it goes through your laptop, and then when you see people DJing on their laptop, they're using Serato. And so there's a way to count Serato spins. There's like a thing that all the Serato people, like, you know, you go to a Serato database, and there's a way for the people to count each record that a DJ is using when they're using Serato. So I think, you know, the Wobble being like kind of like one of those kind of classic black records that it's at every, you know, old school party or every, you know, whatever. So I just wanted to give Mike a shout because, well, Colly Park, I call him, his name is Michael, because he produced like a black classic, you know what I'm saying?
Word up. Okay.
Yeah. And then another shout at is, and I think I told Sean and you about this, there's a woman who works here. I always stay at the same hotel when I come to Atlanta. Like, I never change unless it's sold out. And so obviously I know all the staff now, and they all know me really well. And there's a woman here named Marion, Ms. Marion, we put a handle on it, who's really sweet and like an auntie, you know, like a black auntie, a great elderly lady. And, you know, she always treats me with like love and care and gives me a big hug every time I come into town. And I bought her, I bought her like as a gift, because she used to always tease me, like, where my gift at? You know, when I would come to the hotel, where my gift? And I was like, I got you. So one day, about 3 months ago, I went, there's a candy store not far from here, and they sell like the liquors, the chocolates with the liquor in it. Like, they have like the Bailey's, they have the Bailey's one, and they have like the Jack Daniels candies and all that stuff. So I bought her some Bailey's ones. And so when I saw her the other day, she was like, where'd you get those candies from? Can you get me some more? So I bought her some more the other day. And she was like, yeah, you know, because I take one each night before I go to bed. It helps me sleep better. So.
I love that.
I bought her two bottles this time. So she's good. So peace and love to Miss Marion, who always treats me like a
I love that.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, she's very, like, makes it more comfortable for me when I get here, you know?
Right. I want to give a shout out to Lynn.
Oh, by the way, let me cut you off. Okay. Sean's not with us. He's running around with his wife, but he's going to try to tap in sometime during the show. That's one of people to think he wasn't being quiet.
He'll
because sometimes he'll be quiet and shit. So hey, what are you going
to
say?
Well, I want to give a shout out to Lin-Manuel Miranda, best known as the creator of Hamilton. But Lin's first play, first successful Broadway hit, was In the Heights, which is a musical that was based in Washington Heights, where Lin is from.
Where he's from, yep.
And I've been noticing, we may have even mentioned on the show, I knew they were going to be shooting around here this summer. And I noticed, and Washington Heights is not that big at all. It's like, what, 10 blocks, 15 blocks? It's not a huge radius. Well, because but
Exactly. What is Washington Heights? Because like I've heard
people say, it's 155th to like 181st, or maybe the 185th.
Yeah, because after that, I guess it's technically Inwood. After although 185th,
I feel like you're definitely in Inwood.
Yeah, I counted up to 207. Some people count 207.
Once you cross Dyckman, you're 100% in Inwood. You got to at least count 100.
All right.
Like, stop on 207th Street is literally Inwood.
I know, but
once you cross Dyckman, you're definitely, for those who are in New York, you're definitely in Inwood at that point. But anyway, so it's not, but I say that to say, like, it's not a big neighborhood. It's an even smaller neighborhood than Harlem because we don't go all the way. We only, because we get cut off by the river.
There is no east side.
Right. So anyway, I was walking from 181st Street. There's a Google on 181st Street. I went and dropped some stuff off. I thought at first was a block party. And then I was like, are they dancing? What's happening? And then I saw cameras and all of that stuff. And I was like, oh, it's in the Heights. And Lynn and I are friends on Twitter. So like I tweeted at Lynn, made a little joke that I was walking through his shot. Because I didn't see him. I scanned the set for him. I didn't see him. Mm-hmm. And because whole lot of people there. And he DM'd me and he was like, yo, where are you? Come back. Find me. I have on, like, I'm over here, whatever. So I hung out with him for a minute and like watched the shots on the video. That was my first time meeting him in person. But like he had me sit with him in the video village and director's chair and watch the shots and we talked and he's just so nice. Like he's lovely. Like he's absolutely lovely. And you know, I was asking him what it must feel like. I was telling him I can't imagine what it must feel like to have like be a kid from the Heights and you made it and like now you're back and shooting like this massive movie at home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like how surreal that must be. So, and he still lives in the neighborhood. He lives over by you.
I mean, I want to say the street on the air, but yeah, he doesn't live far from me at all. And you know, people kind of, you know, because he's from there, people kind of, because you know, most people, even though where he lives is really nice, obviously it's really nice. It's really nice. It's nice over there. But like, you know, a lot of people, even with that, with you know the income that he's earned, would have moved like downtown, to Jersey or something. But I think, you know, one of the reasons he stays up there is because, first of all, obviously it's his home and his neighborhood, and he can move around really easy. Like, you know, he gets his hair cut up there, like he goes to the store, like nobody bothers him, you know what I'm saying? Like,
it's also not just his home, his wife is from the area too. So
it's their home, you know, so the relatives are there. It's like, but I just think it's kind of cool that he stayed put, but kind of like Spike did. Like, he stays in Brooklyn. Spike can move around Brooklyn very easily and go to restaurants, ain't nobody tripping. Like, you know, he might get a, you know, occasional, you know, picture request once in a blue. But because even where we live, where Lynn is, it's not tourist. There's no tourists come up there. you know what I'm saying? Right. So, like, he can really move around. He's not going to run into, like, a group of people from, you know, Kansas City, like, hey, I love
right.
Like it's just the neighborhood. It's only the neighborhood. So yeah, so peace to him for staying in the neighborhood and shooting a movie, and I'm sure employing people from the neighborhood while he's shooting the movie, you know?
Yeah, which is great. And I mean his crew, everybody, he was telling me that he had already been touching base with all the business owners, making sure they were good because, you know, they're jamming up parking because their set runs from like 180 something all the way down to like 163rd. They've been built, but I mean, not completely, but they've been building out different, you can kind of tell, I don't know how much they're doing over by you, but on my side, you could tell because they're building out old storefronts. You'll see old cars on the street, stuff like that. They're trying to make it look like, I guess, the late 70s, early 80s, maybe like the 80s.
Okay.
So you can tell, like, I think next they're going to be over, like, on 165th Street or something like that. So he said he's been talking to business owners, taking pictures, doing whatever he needs to do, apologizing for, like, jamming up parking, you know, like, all of that. But even the crew, like, as I was wandering around, I was surprised at how close I was able to get to everything without anybody being like, you need to move, you need to go, you can't be over here, you know, because they know, like, they're in
And they're in a comfortable space. Yeah, ain't nobody gonna be coming. Yeah, yeah. They shot over by me about a week or two ago. Was there's these steps that go from me up to Fort Washington. These long steps.
Right.
And so I think they were shooting on the steps for some scenes over there. So
there's something about the steps. Like he has a song about something about taking, you know, that those steps, even if you take the train to, what is it,
181st,
you have to take an elevator, like, to go
up. Exactly, up to Fort Washington. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, man, peace to him. I wanted to mention this crazy-ass story, I don't know if you saw it, about this dude in Russia who lived in a bear den for a month.
Well, I don't know if lived is the right word.
Well, survived.
Survived in a bear den, yeah.
In a bear den for a month, he got attacked by a grizzly bear in Russia. Grizzly bears are fucking massive, so like it is no wins, right? The bear broke his spine and then dragged him into the den where it kept him to use for food for a month, while the bear was kind of coming in and out. And dude, I don't know, he survived by drinking his own urine.
Yeah.
For like a month, and he's got like obviously like multiple injuries. There's pictures of him. He looks dead. Like they're calling him like a living mummy because he literally looks dead. Like he's got his skin is rotting. He can move his arms though. He said that I guess it was a group of hunters in that area, and the dogs from the hunters, I guess must have somehow smelled or knew the guy was in there, so they wouldn't leave the den. And so the guys, I guess, somehow got into the den and found this dude. But
they thought he was dead at first. Yeah, I don't know, man. I might have just had to die. Like, I don't know how, like, what. First of all, the trauma.
Yeah.
Like, I just don't know. And I was actually surprised once I read the article that he was communicative. Like, he was able to communicate with the doctors in the hospital. That amazed me.
Amazed.
They said that, like, obviously, like you said, he had broken his spine, and parts of his skin are just completely decayed.
It just rotted away.
No movement, no anything. I just don't. I mean, God bless that you survived for a month in the bear's den, but mentally, emotionally, not even just, like, the physicality is going to be off the chain, but I just don't know what your life looks like after you spend a month and a fucking bear's den.
Exactly. Like, how are you supposed to recover and just kind of keep it put?
Like, God bless him. Yeah, that's a lot.
She's crazy. Like, yeah.
And God, I say it's really unusual. Like, bears don't do that. Like, they don't. Scientists were, like, really surprised about that.
Yeah, because bears, even when they attack humans, they'll usually beat the shit out of the human and sometimes kill the human, but they don't. They don't always eat the human. It'll just kind of like,
And they also don't usually just fuck with humans just to fuck with humans.
Exactly.
People are now speculating like maybe he was antagonizing the bear, maybe he did something, you know, whatever. So,
fix a piece of that cat. I want to talk about this Tierra Marie story because it's just so bonkers. So Tierra Marie from Love and Hip Hop and the artist, was she the queen of the Def Jam, a queen of Rockefeller or something?
I don't know. Princess,
Don't
give me
that. Wasn't she the
all I know is that she was something, and then Robin Fenty showed up and then she
Because they put about the same time, and actually like at that time people you know, it's been a long time, and obviously like Robin Fenty is now just, you know, an iconic figure, but people thought Tierra Marie was the one.
Yeah, L.A. apparently said in her book, because somebody tagged me in a tweet yesterday. I think L.A. said it in his book, and she was like, maybe one day Naima will tell us what really happened. And I was like, Rihanna happened. Like, that ain't even deep. Like, that's, ain't no more to it. You know, it's just kind of like.
Yeah. But they really thought that, Tierra Marie was going to be like their kind of Mary J. Blige or whatever, like their kind of star.
Was great, but she wasn't going to be a pop hit.
Yeah, and she had this record called Sponsor that I loved. It was Gucci Mane was on that record. It was I thought that record was hot, but yeah, whatever. Alas, it wasn't meant to be. But anyway, so she's been on Love and Hip Hop a couple seasons and trying to find her way out here. She's only 31 years old. She's still really young. Wow. And so last week she got pulled over for driving drunk. I guess they got to say allegedly. They found vodka and Four Loko in her car.
I didn't even know you could get Four Loko. I thought they banned Four Loko.
Where are you buying Four Loko? Is there a Four Loko black market? You know what I'm saying? She was driving on three wheels, so the sparks and shit was flying from the missing tire, and kind of led the cops on a police chase through the Midtown Tunnel. Made it all the way through to the other side on three wheels.
Just the fact that you would drive a disabled vehicle through the Midtown Tunnel, you should go to jail just for that.
At a high rate of speed too.
Period. Because if you break down in the Midtown Tunnel, you fucking everybody up.
Everybody is
like you're fucked. Like Pete, and it's gonna be hard for them to get to you. Like it's just. Yeah.
Peace. God bless her. She made it out to the other side. God, she said without breaking down. Exactly, breaking down or hurting somebody.
Right.
She was unsteady on her feet when they pulled her out. Watery eyes and blah blah blah. She claimed that she only had three glasses of wine at a restaurant. And then she blew three times the legal limit. And had open booze in the front passenger seat of her red 2014 Dodge Charger.
Right. First of all, why are you in a 2014 Dodge Charger?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I have to say, before we get back to her, let's say real quick, the charges she was hit with, among the charges was aggravated driving while intoxicated, consumption of alcohol in the car, and she had and no license. So,
where was she going? Oh, Tierra, where were you going?
Oh my God.
Well, here's the thing. We know she's an addict. We already know that.
Yes.
We know that Tierra does not take casual drinks. Like, she's confessed to this much, even though she doesn't want to admit to how big of a problem is. We've seen it play out on the show if you watch the show. So, you know, it definitely.
She's drinking to get fucked up.
Right. She's drinking to get fucked up. So, like, I'm going to send her thoughts and prayers. 50, leave that girl alone.
I was about to say, to his credit, he hasn't commented as far as I've seen, unless I missed it.
I mean, I think he knows levels.
He hasn't commented on this particular thing.
Well, when I say leave that girl alone, like, he's taking all the little coins she got. You know what I mean? Yeah, like,
she ain't got it, bro. She ain't got it, and you got plenty. I mean, not trying to be in nobody's pockets, but 50, you seem to be doing extraordinarily well. You know, you're a really good businessman.
I mean, it was a stupid play on her part, and I would definitely probably be suing. I'd be looking to get some recompense from my attorney who advised me to play with 50 like that in the first place.
Yeah, yeah.
But, leave that girl alone, 50.
Yeah, please leave. Trouble. Yeah, she's trouble. She needs some help. She needs, you know, some real therapy to kind of dig down into why she keeps doing these things. And again, like I said, she's only 31, so she's got like a long life to live.
Yeah.
You know, God willing, so she needs to, you know, kind of take care of these problems. So I didn't want to bring this story up just to clown. You know,
imagine what it's like to have been like on the brink and didn't make it. You know, like
right there.
Because so, first of all, for everybody who wants to get on, it's so rare that you actually do get signed. Even if you do get signed, it's so rare that you actually get the look. Then when you get the look, it's so rare that you actually get a hit. And she got, like, she was right fucking there. I can't imagine what
company behind her. Jay-Z signed her.
In the video. Yeah, like, I can't. And even though it was over a decade ago, and to still not be able to do it again, I can't imagine. I mean, Olivia seems to be coping with it better, because I also use this example. I think I've said this on here before. Olivia was the centerpiece of Jay Records. Clive, like, he was taking her around, you know, introducing her to people, all sorts of shit. And then Fallen happened, and that was a wrap.
Here come Alicia Keys, and now sudden you're on the outside looking in.
Exactly. So, I mean, Olivia had a slightly second life at G-Unit. Not really, didn't crawl all the way over, but I just can't, and I say this to say with Tierra, like, for that to have happened when she was so young, and she still not have had, like, a second act.
Yeah.
I can't imagine what that does to your self-esteem.
And then, you know, boy shitted on her and put the video out of her, you know, having sex with her and all that. It's just like, oh, my God. I feel bad for her, man. It's psychologically, like I said, you was like, it's like you had to win a lottery ticket and then you lost it. You know what I'm saying? It's terrible. So, yeah, because I didn't want to think that I was just clowning, because that's not, it's actually, like I said, blowing 3 times the legal limit and, you know, driving through the Lincoln Tunnel or through the Midtown Tunnel on 3 wheels is bonkers. You know what I'm saying? It's insane. Did you watch Pose this week?
I did.
Okay, so let's talk about Pose. Yeah. This is episode
3?
2 or 3? It's just 3, right? Yeah. You know, I mean, we are, you know, we say it every week, but it's a great show, and the acting is getting better, and the music is bonkers. Like, when they played Shame this week, that music cue was so dope. I mean, it was interesting because Shame was old.
It was old, yeah.
During the time they're talking about. I mean, it's a classic record. It's always going to play, but, like, yeah, Shame was, like, 77.
Yeah.
So it was a super old, but the way they... The production on the show, everything is just fucking, it's awesome. Yeah. But I thought it was really interesting that they're really kind of giving Angel in the early part of this season. They're giving a lot of the characters who were, Angel's character.
Angel had a major plot line last year.
Yeah, especially because of her and Stan and all that stuff.
She had a major plot line last year. And I think the thing with Angel is that Angel is always going to be centered in a certain way because Angel...
Looks like a woman.
She passes, right? Yeah, the same way it was with Elektra.
But even more so to me, like she like if you did, I hope this isn't like a bad thing to say, like politically, but
don't
like
say
you,
it is.
I'm just saying, if you didn't know, you wouldn't know,
right?
And she looks like a woman, like it's like it's not even like a blink, like oh yeah, it's a woman. Whatever.
Well, I'm just gonna say, for the sake of political correctness,
is that bad? Because
she is a woman.
Well, yes, she is a woman.
She's a woman. I know what you mean.
On the show anyway, she's a woman who still has a male anatomy.
I mean, she's literally a transgender woman in real life. So okay.
She still has a male anatomy.
Oh, I don't know about all that.
Okay.
But I'm just saying, and you know, again, to everybody who's listening, we're all still learning how to properly discuss this, so don't think we're trying to be ignorant on purpose.
We're just trying to work through it. So, but even like Angel, like when she, especially when she like, and on the last episode, it was the same thing. Like when she went to that when the photographer ended up flipping on her, when she like kind of like when they like straighten her hair back and pull it back. And this episode was the same thing. Like it's like wow, like she's beautiful. Like it's crazy. Yeah, it's crazy. You know?
So I think Angel's story is interesting, especially. Sorry, I had a cough drop in my mouth, and I just realized that's loud. Angel's story is interesting. So this season, she's now going to be working with Ford models, which is crazy.
Yes.
Which it for those who are younger, which I think all of our listeners would know, but like at one point was like the most elite modeling agency in the world, or at least in New York. So she's going to be working with Ford models and is like one of the faces of a campaign. Again, crazy. Crazy for a new model, let alone like someone who feels like, because I don't think, isn't her name Eileen Ford? I don't think Eileen Ford and them are supposed to know that she's trans.
I don't think so either.
I don't think they're supposed to know. They just think she's street.
Yes.
And then with Elektra, I called it last week. She, old boy from Wall Street, who was paying her big money, but was also like poked out of his mind every session, OD'd while she had him in a harness and in like a mask. What's the word? Is it asphyxiate?
Asphyxiate.
On, you know, vomit, because he had the mask on. And she panicked because even though technically it wasn't her doing, at that point in time, it's kind of like with Black folks getting shot, whether it was our problem or not, like, you know, she knew that she would end up being the one blamed for it, arrested, whatever. So they go to talk to different people to get some help. And she ends up, they end up like basically mummifying him, wrapping him up, hiding him in a trunk in her closet. Mm-hmm. But the way it plays out, like Pose is so great. And shout out to Janet Mock because she directed this episode. What's so great about the way Pose did this is that as morbid as it was, they also handled it with a deft touch and it was funny, but not funny in a like, fuck this white dude, whatever kind of way. Like, you know, Elektra genuinely felt guilty for what they were doing. But then Candy, an old girl who did the butt shots, are like high camp comedy about it. You know what I mean? So I think that that balance played really well. But it's based on
a true story.
Yeah. Well, we don't know the so the part that's true is that there was a famous
mummified man in the
closet. There was a famous house mother. House of what's her name? Cortland. I'll find it.
Okay.
Amazon's been trying to call me. There was a famous house mother who was, after she died, they found mummified remains in like a garment bag in her closet. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't as technologically advanced as what Elektra and them did. She had just put baking soda all over him and wrapped them up really tightly. And hidden him for at least a decade.
And I believe that house mother was in
she was in Paris is Burning. She was in Paris, and I'm trying to find her name. I'm so sorry because I'm scrolling through Janet's.
I mean, keep talking. I'm looking it up.
Here it is. It was Dorian Corey.
Dorian Corey. They did a quote at the end of the show from Dorian.
That was from Dorian Corey, and Dorian Corey was Black, and she lived in Harlem. So you know, obviously, but the guy that they found had a bullet in his head. So there were some people who knew Dorian who said that she had mentioned like something had happened, but apparently Dorian left a note that said this poor gentleman was trying to rob me, but people think that she might have left it just to be like, to cover her tracks, whatever. So no, that's the
cover
end.
Her tracks, yeah.
Yeah, but most likely it was a dude that she was having a relationship with, and some shit went left. But we don't. Yeah, but nobody will ever really know. And he went.
I thought it was also interesting that they showed. This season has been more, I guess, graphic, in certain things. Like, and it was interesting that they showed. The other trans woman who came over and was talking to them, who was a streetwalker.
Yeah.
I remember she showed how the dude like jumped on her in the car and whipped her ass. And like they really like showed like the dude beating the shit out of her, like, and them fighting and the cops, you know, like letting the dude off the hook and all that shit. It's like
I think Pose recognizes, just like we always appreciate like unabashed truth in Black storytelling, I think Pose realizes that they have like a very unique position right now in telling these stories, because that's the thing, even in 2019, even as we have more conversations about transgender and binary and differently gendered and non-gendered, and even as we're still grappling, some people are still grappling with conversations around sexuality, we've now moved into having more discourse about gender. The transgender community is still highly misunderstood, largely invisible, still, you know, something that some people grapple with to understand. And so the opportunity, the knowledge is tell these stories, but to frame them in like, this shit ain't new, like we were here, y'all just didn't know we were here, I think is really important. Like, you know, all of this stuff was happening decades ago, you know, and I think all of that is very important. So I applaud them for telling the real stories and for putting in sprinkles of actual, like real stories that happen when and where they're able to.
I'm always curious to wonder how much do the actors or actresses, or actors and actresses, contribute like with their real life experiences?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know. That's
like, I wonder how much, like, you know, Angel was like, oh, you know, I mean, obviously, like, they're, the show is written, but right. I wonder sometimes it's like when Angel would be like, yeah, because I remember one time, blah, blah, blah. Or,
right.
Or, you know, the Blanca characters, yeah, because I remember, you know, when I used to blah, blah, blah. Before. Right. Like, you know, or even like last week, when Blanca's character was talking to Angel, Angel was getting on about the way she dresses, and she was right. like, I got to steal like a steal because I don't look like you. And like, right. I wonder how much of that's coming, you know, from the, I'm just curious. I don't know if
anything. And I don't want to presume, I don't want to say like in 2019, everything's all good. But in 2019, a woman that looks like Blanca coming in and shopping in a store, at least in New York, yeah. I don't think would.
I don't think it would trip.
A trip. You know, I mean, if you like in fucking Arkansas or something, I don't know. But Blanca also comes from a Broadway background, I think. I think I have to say, I don't, and I'm not saying to say that they don't still have their own stories, but I don't know if they have the same stories as like the 80s and then early 90s.
Yeah, I got you. Yeah, when it was way more hardcore. You know what I'm saying? Like, way more hardcore.
Even in New York, you couldn't.
Yeah, it was hardcore, which is why I saw some people commenting last week on the Blanca storyline when she got the salon. And they were, you know, they were like, man, I would have just, you know, left and da-da-da-da. I would just took the money. And I'm like, yo, but back in, like, 1990, like, that was damn near impossible for especially a trans woman, or any woman, especially a trans woman, to get a nail salon of that size and space.
Exactly.
Like it wasn't, it would take the money and go where?
You know what I'm saying? And go where, exactly.
Yeah, like, you know what I'm saying? You know, like, she had to kind of eat that and deal with that, you know, Leona Helmsley type character, because it's like, that was her option. It was that, or like, yeah, she'd take the money and then she'd just be back in the house, you know?
Right.
You know, yeah, people kind of forget, like, this show was based like 30 years ago when shit was, you know, not that it's great now for that community, but back then it was way worse, you know?
Right.
Also, the one more thing I wanted to mention about, I think it's interesting how they're how they're carrying the Poppy Angel storyline, and how Poppy
first of all,
He's a real nigga, and he's getting some great scenes, like as far as acting, like to show that his chops, and that he looks at her as a woman.
Yeah,
like he's not even tripping. You know what I'm saying? He's like, this is.
Yeah, he's really like, y'all been waiting for a girl like you. Like, you got my head all big. Like, Poppy's such a Bronx nigga. Like, he's so old New York.
Yeah,
the fact that his name is Lil Poppy, like, I love, and he's a character that's showing a lot of growth. Because remember, she had kicked him out the house.
Yeah.
For selling drugs.
He almost was like when he first was introduced to the show, he was almost like kind of slow and like just kind of dumb and goofy, and you know, but now he's kind of like getting his wind up under him and shit.
Right. You know. Well, that's the other thing that I love is that, you know, people now use the phrase mother for like their favorite female celebrity, right? Like Beyonce is mother, Nicki Minaj is mother, Rihanna's mother.
Beverly's mother.
But I was about to get that. Bevy is a mother in the real sense of the word, in the sense of the word that it used to be used. Like they took it from ballroom and trans culture, it is an appropriation, even though it's still mostly like gay kids who use it. But I think that Blanca is such an example of what mother really meant, what a house really meant. Like, being a part of a house wasn't just about winning trophies. Like, being a part of a house was about the fact that your own family had disowned you, so you created this new family, which is why you took on their last name, which is why you took, like, it literally was about having a family. So mother of the house was more than just the fiercest ballroom walker. It was supposed to be what Blanca is. Like, let me encourage you to go get a job. We have house rules. We eat family dinner. You need to do that. We keep you out of trouble.
Yeah.
Let me give you the love and support that your biological family would not. So like she said, I think in episode, either last episode or episode one, she was like, ballroom is about family.
Yeah.
And I think that is really important to show, like, that's what it meant. So I say that bevy is a mother in a traditional sense of the word, because though, like, all the guys, all the younger guys, you know, bevy is mother and Emil Wibikin, the former EIC of Vibe, and who is now the founder of, is it Native Son? Native Son?
I'm not sure.
Organization? I'm not sure. Is, and he was an LGBTQIA plus, I think I got it all right, activist. They are mother and father because they, even though Bev's not gay, they give direction, they give instruction, they give support. They come together as families. If you follow Bevy on Instagram, you will see there's always like family dinners and family trips and family. Mm-hmm. I say Bevy is mother in like a true sense of the word. And she, yeah. I also can tell you that she won't let just anybody call her that.
Yeah, this is true.
Yeah,
this
she'll be true. Like, you ain't want, she won't let everybody call her auntie either. She'll be like, I, no.
Yeah, so but so the show's been great. You know what I'm saying? I look forward to it every week. And I just, you know, it's kind of cool because you don't really quite know, you know, where they're going week to week.
Yeah.
It's, no, yeah. it's no, you know, you can't predict what's going to happen. So it's good. It's dope. You said you don't watch Queen Sugar, right?
I gotta catch up. Like I said, I skipped out. For some reason, I can't even tell you what happened. Sometimes, this is weird, and I know it's weird. Sometimes something happens in an episode of a show, and I hit a block, and I just don't go back. It happened with me with Billions, and I really need to catch up because I really like that show, and I don't even know what happened. It happened with me with The Shy this season, and I don't know why, but for some reason, I was trying to watch the first episode of the last season of Queen Sugar. And I don't remember what happened, but I just remember I turned it off and I just haven't gone back yet. And I need to catch up though, because I know the season is real.
So it's, this season.
I might do it over the weekend, or I might like watch it while I'm in NOLA or something like that.
Yeah, this season's been crazy.
I do want to say though, I'm sure you talked about it here. I finally Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse is on Netflix.
Oh, you hadn't seen it.
I hadn't seen it, and I'm mad though because I really wanted to see it on the big screen, and I still want to see if I can find it somewhere on the big screen, because I can tell the parts, because I can tell some parts are supposed to be 3D.
Mm-hmm.
So good though. Oh my God.
Movie, I told you that movie is incredible. Incredible.
I watched it two times back to back. Just
The music. The music is crazy. Like it's like
music is crazy. The writing is really good.
I mean,
the writing's really good. It's just good. It's so good.
That movie is dope. For those who haven't seen it, like I said, now especially now it's on Netflix, you really gotta check it out. Like it's a great mistake, really well done. The Miles character's like he's really like a 16-year-old kid from Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Like he's like they nailed it down to like what he wears, the way like everything. They just like his mom's, his pops, like it's the movie is dope. It's super dope, you know. And people
it's
think,
really
you know, because animated, it's like you know whatever.
It's
but
really great, it's really.
Did you go see Toy Story yet?
No, you know I
hear
really,
this. I hear they say this might be the best one. It is just incredible.
I don't go see Toy Story in theaters. And Toy Story. So here's the thing with me and Pixar. As much as I love Pixar movies, it's like you're volunteering to be fucked up emotionally.
Oh,
it's
yeah, like, this one, this, like, this one, you
yeah.
find,
it's like you're signing up to go and let them fucking have you crying in the club. I don't know if I'm ready for that. I just don't know if I'm ready. So, yeah.
Yeah, they say this one, like, I mean, I've read some reviews. They said, like, I guess there's some scene early in where you're broken, already broken down.
Like, it took me a lot, because I was never a fan, per se, of the Toy Story franchise, so I'll catch them when I catch them.
Mm-hmm.
But 3 fucked me up. So I was like,
And they say this one, they say the ending of this one is worse than 3. Like they say like, you know, grown adults is in there like bawling like 3-year olds. So, but I'm a troop it out. I missed Godzilla.
I haven't really heard much about Godzilla either.
I heard it wasn't that good. My man Brian went to see it. He said it was all
right. Right.
I still just wanted to see it.
I was like, didn't we just do, didn't we just do a Godzilla movie like 4 years ago?
I think it was, like 4 or 5 years ago.
Was this like Godzilla and Mothra or something?
Yeah, but you know, they're making it.
Godzilla and Mothra. So what was this?
This was, Mothra and it was in this.
Oh, okay.
So, but they're making it a series because the next one's supposed to be Godzilla versus King Kong.
Now I'll go see that.
Yeah, so King Kong apparently was in this one like a little bit, and then they're gonna put them together, and so I'm gonna catch it at some point. Real quick, Democratic debates. Did you watch any of them?
I have been following via Twitter.
Okay.
Here's the thing. I don't want to sound like an irresponsible citizen. I think all y'all know me better than that. But the 2016 election cycle wore me out. And yeah. I cannot get that engaged that early this time, because this one is going to be even more exhausting.
And the thing about the 2016 election cycle is it hasn't really stopped.
Right. It's been ongoing.
It's been ongoing to now.
Yeah. And with the 2016, like, I remember watching that first Republican debate before that cycle, when they had 82,000 people and had to do it, you know, over two different nights, and being like, oh my God, this is the dumbest shit ever. And that was us, right? So it's like, I need to wait for the pool to shrink a little bit before I get more invested. That's my answer. I like, there's two people on the stage that I don't even know who they are. I don't need to tune into shit.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't watch, I was watching like on MSNBC, so, you know, and stuff like that. So you kind of seeing it, like, you don't have to sit there for 2 hours. It's more highlights, but you kind of get the gist of it. But it's just kind of wild, too, like, what's happened with the political discourse in this country. I think more than ever before, it's like all these people just jumping in.
Right.
Like the fact that there are 20 Democratic candidates. And like last time with the Republicans, it was like the same thing. It was like 20-something guys. It's like it never was. I mean, it would always be, you know, choices, but it would never be like 20-something people. Like, because a lot of these people are obviously just not going to win. They're not qualified, or they don't have the Q rating, or they don't have the, you know, the they don't have whatever it is to win, but they're just doing it almost like for just like a selfish reasons now, just to get in that world. They know they're not going to win, but they're going to spin it into speaking engagements or getting on a permanent space on CNN, like Santorum's clown ass did, or writing a book, or what. Like, you can tell it's like, okay, fam, you know, this is just all for you, because there's no way you think you're going to win. There's just no way, you know. That's kind of annoying, but I guess in the next, you know, few weeks, some of these people start to fall off, because, you know, you only have a certain amount of money, and if you can't, you know, if your campaign isn't thriving and you can't pay people and all that, you got to check out. Last night, the big highlight was Kamala Harris had a great debate, and I'm not surprised. I kept saying, like, I mean, I'm not saying she's even going to win a nomination, but I've said, like, you know, on Twitter and other places, like, I felt like once Kamala got to the debate, she was going to shine.
Yeah.
You know, she's great looking. She's a prosecutor. She's, you know, she's got a lot of personality. Like, I knew she would cut. Obviously, she's a woman, so she was gonna kind of cut through. And she went hard last night, and to all accounts, she won the debate. She went at Joe Biden crazy. You know, kind of rocked him a little bit, put him back on his heels with his busing votes and stuff from the past. So she had a good night. And the first night, I guess Elizabeth Warren kind of won that one. Her and the cat Castro, Julian Castro, who was used to be the mayor of San Antonio.
I heard Julian Castro made some really good.
Efforts. But we'll see. I mean, Biden's still way out in front because, you know,
it's because he's Biden.
And he's got the old, especially on the black side, he's got the old establishment. You know, the Sharptons, the Jesse Jacksons, the NAACP. You know, he's got them, you know, for lack of a better term, in his back pocket. So they're going to rock with him regardless. James Clyburn, they're going to rock with him regardless. Right. So it's kind of like Booker and Kamala, I hate when I miss her name wrong, especially Kamala, because Booker only has like 3%. He's not going to get there.
Yeah, he's.
But Kamala's got to cut into the old guard, or really galvanize the young guard. You know, the young guard, especially on the black side, younger black, the kind of like the Essence Fest generation.
The Essence Fest generation is the old black guard.
Well, but you know, you got people like you and like that too.
Yeah, but the thing about Kamala is that her problem isn't even going to be like my generation, the Gen Xers. It is, as it is with everybody, and I don't even want to just say it's the millennials, but the hardest voting block to get are the people whose first election was for, whose first vote was for Obama.
Yes.
Because there had never in my lifetime, maybe when we're talking like JFK and Bobby, but I had never seen such passion and fervor and an unequivocated belief that you were voting for the right person, right? Mm. Most of us grew
up from the youth.
Yeah, but I mean, even for myself, voting for a candidate, most of us voted, sometimes we were voting against somebody, right? So like, yeah. I had, for example, I had zero faith in John Kerry as a president, but I was not going to vote for George Bush. Like mm-hmm. that, like that. Or and I really wasn't even really trying to have Al Gore as a president, but I wasn't going to vote for George Bush, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like those things. And when I think my first presidential vote was for Clinton, and like I felt confident in my vote, but I was also like not as politically engaged. I was really young, mm-hmm. but they're looking for somebody who inspires them, and I don't want to say all of them, but many of them are looking for somebody who inspires them the way Obama inspires them, which is why so many of them clung to Bernie. Because he like ignited something. It's a little cult of personality ish.
And also because Bernie focused so much on young issues like college, you know, college and free healthcare and stuff like that. So like he tapped into what people who are young are trying to figure out. He's like, you know, I'm saddled with this $100,000 in debt, and this guy's talking about like freeing me of that shit. Right. You know, but,
and also there is. Now that we are in this quote unquote cancel culture age, there is a lesser willingness to forgive old records, right? Mm-hmm. So this is what's gonna hurt Joe mm-hmm. because you dig back like 20 years and shit don't look great, right?
Yep.
But I think,
ain't looking so good in the light, Joe.
Yeah, but then some of us who are like over 40 maybe are a little bit more able to let that pass because we just remember how different the climate was 20 mm-hmm. years ago. I'm mm-hmm. saying it's okay. I'm just saying we're just a little more accommodating and allowing of that. But younger folks ain't. They like, nah, fuck that. Which is also why they're not fucking with Kamala, right? Because she was a prosecutor. And it's like, the question is, can Black people really trust a Black person who was a prosecutor? And so it's going to be interesting to see this unfold because mm-hmm. I think the problem isn't trying to get Trump voters to convert. The problem is trying to get apathetic voters to vote.
Yep.
And that's why I really can't fuck with Bernie because he keeps focusing on trying to convert Trump voters. No, you need to engage the people who don't trust the process, don't trust the system, and who think everybody in the pool is whack, right?
Yeah.
So, and there are some people who are just at this point like the system don't work. Fuck it, I'm not doing shit.
Yeah, I'm just checked out. I'm just checked out. I think there'll be less of that this time because of Trump being so fucking heinous and disgusting and ridiculous that people obviously still have a lot of problems with the system, you know, in and of itself. But at this point, if the Democrats can just figure out a strategy and stop fucking flailing, like it's like people, there's a huge chunk of people in the country that just want him out. It's like, get him out. We know shit is fucked up and it's going to be a mess and we got to clean up some shit. And like, but just get him the fuck out of there. And then we'll deal with the other shit after. But like, that's got to be the focus. He's got to go.
I want somebody to tell me how the fuck they're going to stop Lindsey Graham. That's what the fuck I want to know.
Yeah, and McConnell.
I need like, what's your Mitch McConnell plan? Because even if we get Trump out of here, some of the most egregious shit is Mitch.
Yeah.
It's his doing.
Yeah, this most of it is his doing.
Yeah, it's his plan, it's his doing. He was on like the super long game.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so you know, so obviously there'll be a lot more debates, and we'll keep watching. But you know, Kamala had a slick thing last night where she talked about busing with Joe, and she talked about how she was bussed, and you know, she was the second class to be bussed in Berkeley, California, and that was 20 years after, you know, Brown versus Boards, and she was like, "Dude, like I got bussed, and like I was." It was 20 years later, and it was still fun. And Joe had some these very questionable votes against for busing during that era. So she got his neck. It was It was impressive. It was. I mean, she did go to Howard. I mean, she got some black in her now.
And she released a. She's doing a new campaign directed towards HBCU grads and Divine Nine members that she released this morning. Very smart, because, you know, people have kind of made her like the white black woman.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like reminding, you know.
I wonder if she'll be at Essence.
From a security standpoint, well, then again, Floatus is going to be there. Maybe? Yeah,
I don't know. We'll see.
But it's 4th of July weekend. She might be needing to go shake hands with his babies.
Yeah, true. Gossipy. Hold on. Let's just do one more political thing, and then we'll jump into some gossip real quick. The kids at the borders.
Yes.
This has turned into, well, the concentration camps at the borders, because that's what they are.
That's what they are, literally.
They're literally what they are. They're the concentration camps at the borders. This is, it's been going on for quite a while. The story is starting to reach a fever pitch. Trump is, of course, taking no responsibility for it. He keeps talking about, like, Obama started this shit, but the Obama administration weren't separating families and throwing
kids in cages.
And even if it was that, which it wasn't,
they had a very
it doesn't matter. It's like, yeah. What are you doing now? Like, Nick, right. You've been in office for almost 3 years. Like, what are you, even if that was the case, and again, it definitely wasn't, like, you can change it. So what do you say? That's the part when he did the interview with Chuck Todd. I can't wait for Chuck Todd to be like, okay, but like, what are you doing to change
Chuck
it?
Chuck Todd ain't gonna do that. Cause Chuck Todd's a
bitch ass nigga, man.
Yeah, fuck him. But he ain't gonna do that.
Yeah, obviously Chuck Todd's the war. Like he'll say shit and it's like he's doing this interview with Trump and just let him say shit and there's no. Soledad O'Brien always talks about that on her Instagram feed. Like there's never no follow up when this nigga says some crazy shit. Right. It's like you just let it rock. Really? That's it. Okay. It's unbelievable, but yeah, but the concentration camps, the kids are dying, they're deathly sick. There's a lawyer who is arguing that they don't need toothpaste and soap. Like
it's crazy. It's
Nazi Germany.
Yeah,
it's Nazi Germany, and it's bugging me out that people like are arguing when AOC called them concentration camps.
Right,
how people argue that you shouldn't say that. Like,
they literally are concentration. So there's a difference between concentration camps and death camps, right?
Yes.
So the reason people don't want to call them concentration camps is because what they're thinking is death camps. But concentration camps literally means that it is a camp with a large concentration of people. That's what they are. They are concentration camps. Now, what happened in Nazi Germany is that they started with concentration camps and then they escalated to death camps. And just like now, nobody was really tripping when it was just concentration camps. And then once it became death camps, people either acted like they didn't believe it, or they turned black because the Nazis were very good at propaganda. And when Trump would come around, they would like have people, I don't know, playing bocce ball or some dumb
shit. Acting like shit was cool.
Yeah. So they would put on like a display. So a few historians have been like, this is not how it all started. We're like several steps in.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't know how people like are okay with this. Like there was a story about how basically the kids, like 8-year-olds in there are watching 2-year-olds
who they're not related to.
Like the 2-year-old and who was the subject of this one story. The kid who was the subject of this one story, like didn't speak English. Like, you know what I mean? So it's like, so you already got kids traumatized because of detached from their families. Some of these kids have family in the States where protocol under the Obama administration would have been to have them detained for a couple of days, process them, locate family, get them out.
Yep.
And these kids have just been there for an indefinite amount of time.
Yeah. What you got anything to say about it, bro?
I mean, I think that this is about another way that the Republican Party has, to me, just to back out of it a little bit, and I know that this might sound a little callous, right? But what is happening, in my opinion, is that Trump is his ability to be manipulated and used because he's so easily swayed.
Mm-hmm. All you gotta do is flatter him.
Is what Mitch and that Republican Party is using this to set a precedent. All of these things, like all of these laws that you see, even at the state level, are all done in a way to push back federal laws. They want to get this stuff in front of the Supreme Court, right? Mm-hmm. Like, no reasonable human being can argue that a child should be without a blanket, toothpaste, or soap, which is why when you saw the clip of that Justice Department lawyer, it's why the judge seemed so, what's the word, incredulous? Like, he's
like, what the fuck is you talking
about? Are you really, like just to be clear, are you saying that is reasonable assumption? No, it's not a reasonable assumption at all. The entire point is to back out of any level of obligation.
Right.
Right? And what that does is it chips away at what you can do, because I know this might be
a little, slowly normalizes this.
Yes, and this might be a little hyperbolic, right? But it starts at we're not going to give them toothpaste, right? And in a few years, there's a fucking mass grave in the middle of the desert.
Yep,
exactly.
Yeah.
And one of the judges, and if you just said this, I'm sorry, Sean, I was going to say, and one of the judges in that case actually was in a Japanese internment camp as a kid.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Because this isn't we don't even have to go back to Nazi Germany. Like, the U.S. did this before.
Yeah, in the 40s.
Yeah, out in California.
A lot of people are still alive.
Japanese internment camps. Exactly. Like, they took all that shit. Like, I can't remember the title of the book, but I read a book about it. It was really riveting. It's fiction, but it was based on, like, shit that really happened. But literally, Japanese family had come over after the war, built a nice life. All of a sudden, like, all they know is that they got to pack their shit and leave, you know, and just, like, leave everything behind.
Yep.
Lost valuables. You know what I mean?
All your, like, shit.
Just pack what you can carry, and you go to this fucking camp, separated from families. And when they could, they kept families together. I think in some cases, like, the kids might have been separated out. But this isn't really ancient. This was, like, the 40s. So it's like, it wasn't even that long ago. You know?
During World War
After what? World War II?
This was during World War II. Yeah, mm-hmm. I think this was during World War II.
Okay.
Sulu from Star Trek. He was in one of those as a kid.
If I'm not mistaken, and I'm, you know, no historian, but I believe it was after Pearl Harbor.
Yeah, it was after Pearl Harbor.
They used
Pearl Harbor as an excuse to come round everybody up.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yes, which is why you see when these guys go out and give their stump speeches, which is why they parade these families who have had tragedies occur, you know, within their family by a person that was, you know, an immigrant. And they're able to just sort of paint this wide, ridiculous, you know, unnecessary brush for all immigrants.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Everybody. Yeah, so. It's crazy, man. I mean, you know, like I said, kids dying literally at the border. Like, but now it's hot. Now, you know, this border of Texas and Mexico was 100 something degrees every day. I doubt there's AC. Like, it's
your man brutal, is
disgusting.
Yeah.
Your man is disgusting, man. I mean, we say it all the time, but, like, you know, and it's bugging me out that people still think, like, somehow, like, they're going to talk to him and he's going to, like, a light's going to go off and he's going to become, a decent person. It's like, yo, this thing has been showing you for years. He's a scumbag, yo. Like, what do you want?
I actually think those people who keep saying that and who keep sort of acting in some level of good faith that will happen, I think are actually more of an enemy than we often admit.
Yep. Yeah, because they just keep giving them more chances and more chances.
Agreed.
And now I wonder, are you giving them chances or are you just sort of rocking with them? Yeah. Are you just playing devil's advocate for the sake of needing to be contrarian, right?
Yeah.
I can't wrap my head around anyone who would think that there's a realistic chance that this motherfucker has an ounce of a heart.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, you say you just wasting time. You're just being on TV at this point. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know? Carmelo Anthony. Man, Carmelo, man.
This nigga
here. So I guess we have to start this.
I'll let y'all take this because I ain't even paying attention to his ass.
Okay. So I'm going to start the topic off by saying allegedly to the whole story.
It's not.
just because he was seen on a yacht in the south of France with an unidentified woman, paparazzi. You know, paparazzi out there, like, they're like probably the the best at catching niggas out there. They caught Princess Di out there. Like, you can't really hide from them. So they caught pictures of him on his yacht with some unidentified woman sunbathing. He denied it and said that he was just on a yacht doing some business with a husband and his wife. The husband we still to this day have not seen. Ain't seen no husband. Ain't seen no pictures of no husband. Ain't seen no posts from no husband saying he was on the boat. Lala was at the BET Awards at the time. Carmella goes on public social media to say that, you know, it's messed up. And then, yo, now I got to explain this to my wife. I got to explain this to my son. This woman's not in the public eye. You messing with people's families. Lala starts to post Instagram things of, like, a broken heart and, like, the crying emoji and starts deleting posts about Carmelo. And I think this was actually on her birthday, right?
Oh, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think it was on her birthday when it happened. So it was just kind of like, nigga, like, what are you doing, my nigga? Like,
I mean, like I said, you know, Melo is like he's the friend that you kind of got to chill with hanging out with.
Yeah.
Because it's just sloppy. It's just ridiculously sloppy at this point. And, you know, I'm not saying that with any judgment about whatever people do. But like, dude, I mean, I don't know how you thought this was going to play out.
Yeah,
like, I'm gonna get a huge ass yacht, and I'm gonna go to a place where paparazzi is known for, and I'm gonna, you know, like, nigga, they could take a shot from thousands of yards away. Like,
that's what they do. That's what they do. Yeah.
So I mean, and at the end of the day, man, there's gonna be shipping manifest. There's gonna be they have plugs and moles in every facet of life. So yeah, man, like. You know the maids at the hotel, the bellhops, security guys, all of that shit. They know all that shit. So how he's moving is just crazy to me. But also, I just gotta say, you know, when he made the post,
the video,
it didn't curl all the way over. It didn't curl all the way over, bro. Like it felt like. A nigga lying. Like, that's what it felt like. I ain't saying he was lying.
But it felt like.
I'm saying if a nigga was lying, that's what it would look like.
That's what it sounded like.
It's like, yeah, I'm like, what are we doing here?
Yeah, nigga. Man? Nigga. Because my thing was, my nigga, why do you have to explain this to your wife and your son if they know,
why are you even talking about this? This has no consequence. And then I'm like, okay, so then if that's the case, then if you was going to post a video, you would have posted it with you, her family, her,
exactly.
You know, all of the other people that were on the boat.
Like, yo, we all here chilling. Don't get the wrong ideas. The husband would have been like, yo, I got you, fam. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, like, yo, go, let's do this post real quick. Yo, we all here together. Like I said, I ain't seen hide or hair of that nigga yet.
And you know, listen, the other thing I want to say, too, man, is like, Carmelo was what, 34,
35? Yeah, same age as LeBron. They're all the same age. Yeah. 34,
he's
35.
He's too old for this shit.
Yeah. And you know, not just him. Okay, because Lala's
she 40. Is too. You right?
Yeah. Both of you niggas gonna need y'all stop acting like y'all 17-year-olds. Okay, because this is the shit that I be overhearing my 10th grade daughter talking about.
Okay, well, she posted on Instagram.
And then she unfollowed him.
You unfollowed her.
I'm like, what are we doing here? Like, you guys, like, and you guys don't have, you know. Look, I'm not judging their parenting at all. But I'm saying you guys have a kid that is of age, right?
Like, it's not like Zion is 100% old enough to be on these Nets.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, he's all in that. He's absolutely all in that.
Absolutely.
And so what is like, and then just as a man, like, okay, my nigga, like, you stepped out allegedly. You stepped out. You allegedly had a kid. You guys tried to reconcile. you know, the public had to deal with Bad Bitch Summer Tour
Word.
2017.
Word.
That I was posting.
Word. Mad
Yeah, like, I'm really not trying to go through that again. I'm not.
And I'm just kind of like, okay, fam, if you guys are looking to reconcile, then do that. Like, if you didn't want to be married, my nigga, like, you had the out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, you had the out.
Yeah, take the L, work it out, and move on with your life.
Yeah, like Lala's not going to be hurting for anything. So I don't understand why there's this sort of, you know, I don't want to say need to stay, because it's kind of like, what are y'all doing?
I feel like it might be a brand thing. I feel like he doesn't want to be.
Nah, it's not a brand thing. Bellowing in the in another shoe deal. Ain't nobody signing him up to be spokesperson for Big Brother, you know, Baltimore. Like, there's nothing on the table. There's no brand. And I also have to say, too, one last thing. I also have to say, Melo, D-Wade, Chris Paul, LeBron, all of them were tight. You would see them together all the time.
All the time.
And when that shit hit the fan with Melo, I haven't seen them niggas in one room together since
then. Word.
Because you know what a married man ain't gonna do? He ain't gonna have your shit trickling into his crib.
Exactly.
At all, exactly. Nigga.
Like, oh, you still hanging out with your little friend, huh? You know you having bitches around. You got to come home and chill.
And again, I'm not. This is no judgment on whatever anybody does. But my nigga, you cannot be out here having your old lady looking crazy.
Crazy.
And a public figure at that.
Yeah, yeah. People sliding right into her fucking comments and going ham.
You know what I'm saying? Because, you know, because this ain't got no cooth, first off.
No,
right?
No.
And then second of all, they think that's the, now is my time, right? So
exactly.
She's dealing with upheaval in her crib. And niggas are basically sending her dick pics, I'm sure.
Yeah, exactly. Yo, what's good? Yo, we should hang out. Yo, when you gonna be back in town? Yo, I mean, I'm talking total shit here, so I don't know anything, right? But I feel like Melo might be, I'm gonna say might, because again, I don't know this nigga, and we all know this nigga. They go through shit. He obviously got a ton of fucking money. He's got so much paper. I think he's made like almost $300 million in his career. So like, money's not the issue. He can move and groove how he wants. I think in his own way, he does. What were you going to say, Sean?
No, I was going to say, Melo's good. He ain't missing no meals.
Oh, hell no. Yeah, in his own kind of way, I think he does, you know, love Lala. And you know, they obviously have a child together, which I'm sure he adores his son as well. But he's got this money. He kind of wants to live the life. So he kind of wants the best of both worlds. Like, you want wifey, you know what I'm saying, and whatever, but he still want to be able to, you know, kind of come, you know, kind of do his thing.
But, yeah, exactly.
But that nigga, but the thing about that type of nigga, and I'm talking shit because I don't know if this is him, but that type of nigga doesn't want his girl doing anything.
Oh, no.
Like, she's not allowed to do. She's not allowed to do shit.
As soon as his woman is out doing something, it becomes my family. I just want my family back. I love my family. That's somebody tweeted this yesterday. Somebody said, don't nobody talk about his family as much as a nigga that just got caught cheating. All of a sudden, it's like, you know.
But that's literally what he did when she went on her tour.
Yeah. Yep.
When she was posting all the pics, he was all in the comments. Doing
every
all that,
picture.
And it was just like, and to be honest, man, it's just like, I, the only thing that really sort of bugged me about this more than anything, not even what is occurring, because, you know, look, that shit happens. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Curtis working third shift now, and him and Darlene, you know what I'm saying?
Ain't seen eye to eye.
Yeah. So, so that's whatever. But, like, for this to play out on social media, man, to, like, have images of, like, hearts with knives through them.
This was
just very, it did not feel like too.
It felt like YFN Lucci and Region A.
Yes. It felt like some shit that was not grown. And them niggas are all the way grown.
Yeah, right. Grown. Grown
like
as fuck.
Y'all, like, real talk, like, you niggas are closer to the end than the beginning, my nigga.
Word. Right. Word. You need to chill. or figure out what you're gonna do, like, and then do it, like, you know, be on.
Just make a decision. But you know, like you said, Jeff, it's about wanting to be able to have, you know what I'm saying, sort of this best of both worlds. And again, if like your shit was on the up and up, if your shit was, it was no problem. And I don't think they completely, and again, we're all talking shit here.
Yeah.
I don't think they 100% reconciled. I think he was working his way. Because, you know, yeah, in reconciliation, that shit usually, I know in the movies, that shit just happens. But like, yeah, that's
real life,
a gradual, that's such a gradual process. Like, nigga go from staying at their friend's crib,
yeah,
to coming, you come back to the crib, but you're on the couch.
Yeah, on the couch.
You're in your guest room.
Right.
Then one night you say, know, you can come upstairs if you want.
She might fix you a plate with the rest of the family.
Maybe.
Right. You know what I'm saying? Maybe. If you're home. But
you might get some ass, yeah, but it ain't gonna be regular now.
If she want to.
You have to sit there and wait for her to make a move. Don't touch nothing, nigga.
So, but there's a gradual process, and it seemed like they were sort of getting toward that reconciliation point. They were out together. They were doing things together. But you know, listen, man. You know, don't nobody listen, man. You ain't never going to just keep a nigga who don't want to be. That's for a man or woman. That's for a man or woman.
Yeah, both ways. Yeah. So we wish their son well more than either one of them, you know what I'm saying? Because he's got to, like you say, he's old enough to have to kind of deal with this shit now.
Yeah.
I hope he's okay. Wanted to end of the show talking about the BET Awards, which were on last Sunday. Funny, because Nicki Minaj wrote this post about how it was the lowest ratings ever, and it's actually, they were actually 10 million people short. They had like some of the highest ratings ever. Because when I saw that, I was like, low ratings, really? Like, that was a great ass show. Like,
that was a great show.
Yeah, it was one of the better BET Awards shows to me, just in general. Like, it was just really well done and moved well. The performances were all great. Like, it was good, you know. So I was like, bottom line is they did great in the rating.
It was the best show they've done in 3 years.
Yeah, because last couple of years was terrible. They did great in the ratings. Regina Hall hosted. She was awesome.
I really enjoyed her.
I really enjoyed her. I loved her whole kind of making everything about her hometown of Washington, D.C., which, you know, used to be Trucker City until gentrification, and kind of goes to me. Like, doesn't get the props it used to get.
Right.
Like, everybody still talks about New York and Chicago and L.A. and up to now Atlanta, you know. But, like, D.C. kind of has gotten forgotten in that kind of mix of black.
D.C. was the original, cities. Like, wasn't D.C. like really kind of the first major metropolitan area to have, like, the Chocolate City nickname?
Yeah,
now absolutely. People say it's Atlanta, but, like.
No, it was D.C. D.C. kind of was Atlanta in the 80s, you know?
Yeah.
This is not with the entertainment, just with the black, upwardly mobile kind of thing. Performances were all good. I really liked her performance with YB and Cordae. I really liked Fantasia. I'm biased because she's on Atlantic, but I really liked Lizzo.
Lizzo was great, and that was a Madonna tribute for those who didn't catch it. Madonna's like
with the cake and the wedding dress. I didn't catch that actually. Even the rap performances was you know half ass decent, like you know Lil Baby and
at least it was creative. Like there was
exactly
a production.
Yeah, it wasn't just like walking around. You know, so Lil Baby and Da Baby,
right?
Both had kind of creative sets. But the highlight, the jewel of the night was the Mary J. Blige. Well, no, but before we do that, I want to talk about something. The Tyler Perry speech. Because I saw you had some comments on it.
Mm-hmm.
So, see, what's the Why you give me the auntie? So, Tyler Perry won the Icon Award. I don't know the exact title of it, but the Icon whatever award for BET, and came up and gave a speech about him kind of basically about him, you know, kind of being knocked down and getting back up and deciding to carve out his own path and his own space in Atlanta, as opposed to going for, as he, quote unquote, a seat at the table in New York or LA. He said he decided to have his own whole table in Atlanta. And he basically said, like, he'll never leave Atlanta, and he loves working in Atlanta. And, you know, he's had built a huge studio, and he sold that, and now he's built another huge studio. And how he's kind of carved out the space for, to have a space for Black people to work, Black actresses and actors to get paid their proper wage and their proper rate. And how he was, you know, basically, you know, telling people to ownership is key, and to, you know, to kind of own our culture and own our stuff, as opposed to trying to just kind of sell our stuff off to the next, to the highest bidder.
Was he talking about it? Did he say all that? He ain't say all that.
Well, I'm paraphrasing.
Crazy. Nah, you nigga, you paraphrasing.
Like, you.
So what part did he not say?
That last part. He ain't say my, or he said some of that. He ain't say nothing.
Ownership.
He ain't say yes. No, he was talking about his motherfucking ownership. Wasn't no we.
No, but he was
no we. Wasn't no we.
No. He said, I don't remember verbatim, but he said ownership. He said own our shit. Well, he didn't say it's verbatim, but he was like own our stuff.
Yes,
own.
He was talking about I'm going to own my stuff.
No.
Yeah, yes. He was saying that. Yes. Yes. I mean,
it was I. He was like, okay, he was like, I did this. I built my seat. Not I built a table for us. I built my table. One person owns my seat.
No, but he said he built his table as, he said he built his table as an example of saying,
no,
like,
he didn't.
He did. He was like, yo, some kid from New Orleans from the bottom can make it. Then I wanted people to see that you could do it too. He did say that.
Yeah, but I didn't remember him saying all the stuff you were saying about selling off our stuff and we got to retain, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, I didn't.
All right, we'll take that part out of it.
Yeah, that's what I was talking about. I think he was saying that, yes, he was leading by example of how you can have ownership.
I agree with that, but he was being sanctimonious about it.
I was going to say, I agree with your point, Nas, that there was a lot of I, right? And so when you hear it, it definitely did not register as a preacher to congregation, we should be doing this, as much as it felt a little, I don't want to say chastising is maybe not the right word, but it was a little, get your shit together, nigga. Like,
how do you explain the reaction to the audience to the speech?
Because in the moment, listen. First of all, Tyler's a great orator, and he had like a preaching cadence, and it was inspirational. His speech was very inspirational, and in the moment, like, I was watching it, and he made some points where I was like, okay. And his overall tone was very inspirational, but when you examine what he said specifically and how he said it, like the part where he was like, well, y'all was out there talking about Oscar so white, I created my own seat at the table, and trying to get a seat at the table, I built my own table. So basically, to me, that's a diss at every Black actor, director, producer who was part of the Oscar so white movement to try to get more people. Basically, because here's the thing, Tyler has never taken criticism well, right? If you look at who Tyler affiliates with, he's very cool with actors, and he's cool with a couple of other like big wigs like Oprah and stuff. You do not see Tyler really fucking with other Black directors and producers.
Well, that's because he directs his own shit.
Well, no, still, other Black directors fuck with each other. Tyler don't fuck with them. They don't fuck with him. And I think that was a big at them. Go ahead, Sean. I'm sorry.
Can I say this? He also, for a very long time, okay, Tyler was the butt of the joke.
About right. to say, they don't fuck with him.
And a lot of these niggas said a lot of fucked up things about Tyler.
Yep.
A lot of slick things about Tyler. And a lot of... What happened?
I said true.
Yes. So to me, I think he was just on some real tunnel vision shit.
I agree.
Yeah, for ages.
That's why he made a comment about the dress. He said that dress bought this studio.
Exactly. And honestly, I look at Tyler, I think I've said this before when we talked on the show. I look at Tyler in the same way as I look at a lot of the the music entrepreneurs like Master P and you know, Cash Money, you know, and some other guys from the South, who kind of came up in the around the same time as him, really, like in the 90s and stuff. They were doing music. He was doing the plays. Like you said, like the kind of like, for lack of a better term, elitist cats was looking at them as like clown shit. Like, y'all niggas is clowns. Y'all niggas is some clown fucking country ass niggas, blah, blah, blah. And it forced Tyler to kind of take on the ownership thing, because he wasn't going to get no deal with nobody, because niggas was clowning him.
But here's my issue with Tyler, and I've said this before, and this is what I said in my rant. I have three distinct issues with Tyler. I applaud Tyler for building an empire. That is to be commended. It's great. He's a dope businessman. He's made a mint of money. He has basically shown his haters, like, you know, y'all may hate what I do, how I do it, but I'm doing it. But in the same turn, like you said, Tyler had to create his own because other people wouldn't give him an in. He was talking about all the actors he's employing. But Tyler's been in the business for 20 years. You got a whole movie studio. You're bragging about having a whole movie studio, but you have never produced another director ever in 20 years. Ever, right?
You don't want to.
Which is fine, but don't get up there and act like you saving Black Hollywood.
I don't disagree with you. I don't disagree with you. No.
Yeah. Don't get up there. If you don't want to produce another black director, that's fine. But don't get up there and act like you fucking the savior of Black Hollywood. The other thing is, Tyler has been boycotted by unions 3 times in 4 years. He does not like to hire union actors. He does not like to hire union crew. He does not like to hire union writers. And when his people ask for union contracts, he fires them. He also likes to produce. He likes to shoot his movies in like 3 weeks. And he doesn't like to pay scale. So he doesn't want to follow union time rules. He doesn't want to follow union pay rules. So it's great that you're paying people in front of the camera, but you're not paying the Black people behind the camera. That's my other issue with Tyler. And my last issue with Tyler is about the content itself, but that's a whole separate thing. But those two things are my main thing. So you can get up there and absolutely get your accolades for what you've done, but all that shit sounding like you are the fucking answer to Black Hollywood, kiss my ass on that.
I think
you're not giving a, like, you're giving a leg up to talent, that's great. But if you're not, when have you ever heard of a Tyler Perry showrunner? When have you ever been able to talk about who's in the Tyler Perry writing room? When have you ever heard of anybody else who works on any of Tyler's shit ever? So if you're
I don't know who the showrunners are for Will Packer. But that doesn't
that may be because you don't read that media, but you could find them very easily because they have conversations, they are interviewed. Penny Prentice is the showrunner for Insecure. You know what I'm saying? Like, I know I can point to other people who've directed Shonda's shit. I can point to other people who've directed Kenya had Tracy directing fucking Blackish. Like, you even
I think you're conflating issues.
Tyler doesn't want to do it, it's fine, but don't be saying
Tyler's style is to write, direct, and produce all his things himself.
Which is fine, but then don't act like you are the fucking savior of Black Hollywood. That's my point.
I don't think he said he was the savior of Black Hollywood.
He was the savior.
He was, I think, like Sean said, he was talking to Spike Lee and Chris Rock. And
but you're doing that whole help somebody cross. I'm trying to help somebody cross.
No. You're talking to these niggas who have clowned you for 25 years. Spike probably has clowned this nigga for 25 years. And you know what the difference of him and Spike is? Spike's great. Spike still has to go to the white man and get that bread to shoot something.
He does, but you know what?
Tyler's like, you know what, nigga? You clowned me for 25 years, but you know what? I can get my movies made whenever I want because I pay for them myself. And my track record is blowing yours out of the water.
But then don't get up there talking about trying to help somebody cross. And don't get up there trying to talk about how
he paid Taraji her rate.
Meanwhile, there are people suing you, my nigga, because you won't pay them fairly. That's my thing. Like, you can't argue about how you pay people fairly while you are also not paying Black people fairly. You cannot.
I think that there's a fundamental argument, right? In that is a fair assessment. In saying that you cannot stand on the foundation of I am a fair and just employer, right? Because especially if you are only angling for certain individuals,
right.
You know, and so for me, I have a little bit of experience here. Clearly, I'm not Tyler Perry, right? Mm-hmm. But I do have an understanding. And what happens is that a lot of people behind the camera, like a lot of times, you don't get the shots at those other opportunities and those bigger opportunities because you don't have the experience.
Right.
Like, that shit really is what it boils down to. And a lot of times, we just aren't able to afford getting the experience. Like, mm-hmm. nigga, I can't work for less than this and actually pay my bills.
Right.
Right? And so that becomes the bit of a hindrance. So I understand it is also important that people behind the camera, not literally the director, like not a person literally behind the camera, but the people that are functioning, the grips, the PAs,
right.
you know, all of those people are paid in a way that is commensurate to their peers.
And the writers, because, and I'm sorry to interrupt, Sean, keep your train of thought, don't lose it. But Jeff, he does not write all his own stuff. He has a writing firm and he doesn't want to pay union writers. Okay, I'm sorry, Sean, go ahead.
But I think that there comes a point, right, where you have to then, as a person, you have to make that call. Like, as an individual, you have to say, am I willing to take this work at this rate, which is less than scale, which is less than my what I would be getting normally, right? But I am working consistently, or do I want to go out here and not work consistently?
Right.
And then I have these massive gaps and I have no credits to show for it. And so, yes, there is a, you know, there's a position that these people are put in that is it's kind of an unfair position.
Right.
Right. But it is also about, I think, okay, I'll put it to you like this. I've been to the studio.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing I noticed was that I've been to the studio twice. I've never seen a white person.
Right.
None.
I've never seen a white person. not one. And it did not come off as, oh, this person was incompetent and they just kind of got this job because. Like, everybody from the security guard at the front gate to the people in the welcome house to the people who were, you know, cleaning the studios, the folks that were there, they were knowledgeable, they were sharp. And the other thing that it felt good to see was it felt like these were people from the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Because one of the things I always think about is how much time we lose in just sort of getting back and forth to a job,
mm-hmm. right?
And how much we lose in terms of just quality of life with our children, with our families. And I'm like, oh, these are people that are really just jumping on the bus and going like four stops home.
Right.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, so what he has done has been incredible. It has been inspiring. But I also have to say that, and this is not his responsibility, but he doesn't have a coaching tree. You know, mm-hmm. in football, we always say the coaching tree of. Mm-hmm. And then there's like this one, you know, person at the epicenter. And then there are all of these other brands. He's like, oh, shit, that's what he learned from. That's what he learned from. Because for a while, all the black coaches in the NFL came from Tony Dungy's right. coaching
yeah.
tree.
Yeah.
And it was about who's your tree. Even Spike, to some degree, has a tree. Like, these are the people that, you know, Malcolm Lee, his cousin, you know, like, mm-hmm. you can kind of point to some people. And I think that because Tyler doesn't have that, but I also, that I think we look at him a little different, but I also think that that's not particularly fine.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? That's the other thing. I think it's perfectly fine.
Well, I agree with that. That's fine for him to not, because Lai doesn't produce other people. And that's fine too, right? Like, it's fine for you to want to produce your own stuff. And I said this when Homegirl, when Lena Waithe called out Denzel and Will. It's fine for you to want to produce your own stuff. But like I said, my problem with Tyler has been his piousness about certain things. When you don't have to look far, to find problems. So like, okay, House of Pain is my main example. When OWN bought House of Pain, they bought like a full 100 episodes, which is unheard of. And 100 episodes is also the syndication point. Mm-hmm. And he basically had writers working almost around the clock to crank out these 100 episodes. Like, he was even talking about how he knew the material wasn't good at first. It was going to get better. So for comparison, House of Pain was on 5 years and it did 254 episodes. Mm-hmm. The Jeffersons was on 8 years and did 253 episodes. House of Pain did 8 seasons in 5 years. So again, like I said, he also works people at different rates of different time rates than like a union would allow for. And Atlanta doesn't require all of, doesn't require.
In fairness, so did Ice Cube. Are we there yet? Was a television show. It literally It literally had to say. So a part of that, that's a part of the business model is what I'm saying.
Right.
Part of the business model is
But my point was, when the writers asked for a union contract, he fired all of them.
Which is, again,
I look at it as his prerogative.
It doesn't look, for somebody who prides themselves publicly on being fair and equitable, if you're only doing it with talent and you're not doing it with the people who are helping create the content, can you real like it does
it doesn't it to, me, to me to me it just as an employer to me you can't even separate it on that plane,
right?
Is it fair? It's just that simple. That Jeff, that is like you saying, "Hey man, I'm gonna, you know, start a business, right?" And then you have an assistant, but you don't want to pay overtime, except that person is working 75 hours a week, right? Like it is unfair to expect that person to not be paid commensurate to the labor that they're putting in,
right?
Right. If you're saying it's just like with anybody, if I do something for you because it's what I do for a living, if I'm a chef and you say, "Hey, dude, I want to hire you as my chef," and then I give you my price and you're like, "But I don't really want to pay that." But nigga, when you thought it was free, I was perfectly fine. I was perfectly my labor was perfectly fine with it being at this lower rate.
Right.
Not that I'm even asking for an extreme rate. I'm saying pay me a fair median rate.
Right.
And then it becomes a problem. That's something that you kind of have to look at. Like,
so like I said, my issue is really just that. Like you're saying, Sean, it's not to dispute what he has done. It's that you are feeling very good about yourself. You standing on all kinds of boxes. Cause every time Tyler did, and I was sure that was about him getting some shit off his chest. And I get it. I'm sure like he is pissed off with them. They don't fuck with him. He don't fuck with them, et cetera, whatever. But it also to me is like, but that's shady because there are untold stories about you having unfair practices on the other end of your business, but you want to, you know, be applauded for this one segment that you have done. You know what I mean? So, and even with the last Madea tour he took out, he was asking specifically for non-union actors. And like, you know what I mean? So it's like, and he got some blowback about it. It just doesn't seep all the way into the mainstream conversation. That's my issue with Tyler. It's not so much like, yeah, you built your studio, you got black people working for you, you put black actors on, you make your own content, you do your own shit, you're fucking wealthy. That's fantastic, but don't get up there and be like, "I did this for them and I did that for them," when at the same time, like, you literally have had unions boycott you 3 times in 4 years. Literally, I'm not making that up. So it's like, that's the problem to me. It's two-faced.
And I have to say, just even taking Tyler out of the equation, it is you have a black label right now that's being put in a position to have to choose with either being part of this union and standing in that, but because they don't feel like they're going to get equitable treatment outside or at any place else, mm-hmm. they kind of have to take this work that is in front of them. That's that's the choice being made here.
Because they're not going to get on over at the Marvel studio or whatever.
That's the point. Nobody's fucking with them. Yo, dude, I remember being, you know, a bodyguard, and motherfuckers would balk at the rates.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Because you know why? Because the market had gotten to the point where any nigga coming out of jail was willing to do it for $100 a day.
Yeah, exactly. Just exactly. And a free t-shirt, you know?
Yeah, so $100 a day don't mean shit when I don't have health coverage. I don't have fucking...
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I have to pay, I have to be bonded. I have to pay for all sorts of shit. Some in some cases, you have to be insured. Like, dude, like, you can't function on $100. Like, that's just impossible.
Yeah, yeah. Well... We always agree to disagree on a lot of the Tyler shit. But anyway, so the highlight of the show was Mary J. Blige's performance.
Right.
Which was awesome to me. She like basically gave a concert. She gave a concert. I was actually wondering, like, how long did they rehearse this? Like, rehearse this thing for like 2 or 3 months.
Oh, I also want to give a shout out to my friend Keisha, who recreated all the those classic Jersey looks for Mary and the Dancers.
How long did they rehearse, Sean? Did you hear?
I didn't hear, but if I had to bet with my experience in on that side of stuff, that was part of her tour that they compressed. So probably.
Oh, so it's already been, okay. So it wasn't just for BT.
No. So what you do is you got a tour going. So Mary, let's say for example, Mary has a 90-minute show. So what Mary does at that point is you get with the MD, you know, you're on the road, you're in Texas, you stop at a studio in Houston, you cut up a show tape, and you guys might rehearse once or twice, but really you're rehearsing the changeovers because that's what's changing, not the choreography, not the music. You know, you're not changing the essence of the performance, you're changing the times of
and the guests and all that stuff, and, like Kim and yes, Method Man, and all that.
Exactly. So those are very, and Mary and Meth, you know, that's not very difficult to do. You know, those are two pros, right?
Yeah.
Like we're
yeah.
not talking about guys that have been out for 2 years. Like we're talking about people with 25 years experience in touring. That's yeah. no, they'll adjust to that. For Method Man and Mary, that's a, to me, honestly, that's a run through. You do that shit at a sound check.
Yeah, and they keep it pushing.
Yeah, they don't have to really rehearse that.
Yeah.
You do maybe one rehearsal at a stage, you know, just to make sure your timing is right. And it, and again, I don't know. I'm not Mary's manager. I'm just saying when you see those really, really structured sets like that, they're just compromising and mixing and matching of a larger set that they've already rehearsed.
Yeah, she killed it, though. Like, she came, she had the boots on, she had the jerseys on. She did the dances. She did records that you don't normally hear her do, like, live. I mean, well, on television, rather. Like, you know, You Remind Me and some other records. Like, she took it back. It wasn't just the kind of standard, you know.
She did our records.
She did our records, exactly. Not just the regular. It's funny, and she, the records she didn't even do. She didn't do Be With You. And she, it was another one she didn't do.
Something well, I mean, like it had to be a quick, like, summation of the
heavy. I'm just saying that's how many hits she has, and she couldn't even do everything.
Right.
Did she do Be Happy?
Yeah.
She did do Be Happy. It was something else she didn't do, whatever, but yeah, no, it was and she was out there with like 15 minutes probably?
Yeah, it was a long set.
It was a long set. Like every time I kept thinking it was gonna end, I was like, oh shit, they still going, you know, and like and like I said, Kim came out and Method Man came out. And
Kim seemed off her game, or was it just me?
Who did?
Kim. I was a little surprised.
I don't know.
Her sound wasn't great. Something was going on.
I think Kim was, oh, I felt like Kim was like, not surprisingly, like overly hyped and excited. And I think that kind of was like maybe fucking with her her breath control.
Because when she came out for the Bad Boy set a couple years ago, like she murdered.
She killed that. She killed that. So
the same.
Yeah.
Yeah. Her earpiece might have had a slight delay in it.
Yeah, because she was dropping lyrics.
Okay. Yeah. I was actually shocked that Puffy didn't have a set on stage.
Me too. Guess what role would he have played? You know what I mean? Where he just been there doing the Diddy Bop?
Sure
he was in the intro video. He made part of it.
Yeah. He was in the video, but I was like, okay, I bet this nigga about to come out here at some point.
Right.
Especially when it was like going that hard. I was like, this nigga about to come. I was spotting that nigga right out the audience.
He might be in the point now, man, where maybe he is actually trying to transition to a more senior executive look. You know what I'm saying? Like,
he don't need to be dancing around and shit.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, we, you know, we kind of joked about that before. It was like, you know, nigga, you out there dancing with niggas that's your kids age. Right?
Word,
like,
word.
You know what I'm saying?
And, yeah, this nigga's 22, nigga. You, come on, you're 50. Yeah, stop.
Yeah, yeah. So that's what it presented to me when, you know, obviously, you know, Andre Harrell and all of those sort of senior guys are talking, and he's amongst those guys versus being on stage.
Yeah, yeah, no, but overall, like I said, it was an amazing performance. I thought it was a great show, really well done, well directed, well produced.
Gotta be honest here.
Okay, go ahead, bro.
The show's too long, dude.
It's 8 to 11:30.
Yeah.
It's too long. It's too long. There's no need. I've said this about the Grammys, so this is no, you know what I'm saying? Like, 3-hour awards, like, that shit is just unreal. I think a lot of those acts that we saw, and I don't mean this is in any sort of disparaging way, but I think There are quite a few acts that we saw that really should have been on the BET Hip Hop Awards.
On the early part. Or on the pre-show, maybe.
On
the Hip Hop Awards. Okay.
Yeah, the Hip Hop Awards. Like, they just, I didn't think that they were. Like, I think that there's no longer a separation of the two. And the whole point that we even had the BET Hip Hop Awards was because they wanted to sort of establish a level of separation, and I feel like it's all married now.
Yeah,
like, and when you watch that show, what are you tuning into the Hip Hop Awards for?
Yeah, exactly. Because I already saw the Baby. I saw Lil Baby. I saw the City Girls. You know what I'm saying?
Like, nigga, you saw every baby, nigga. It was like,
was all the babies. I saw all the babies.
All the babies.
I saw a house full of babies.
You know? So there's just nothing. So to me, I always feel like BET Awards is and should be sort of rooted and grounded in a more R&B soulful angle.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I thought that hip hop, it was a lot. I mean, I remind myself that this is also a television show, and they know that in order to get viewership and some level of engagement,
they got to bring those in.
Yeah, they're going to require that. And I mean, you know, it is what it is. You know, it ain't the end of the world.
Oh, Sean.
Yeah, Sean's coming in and out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry about that. Go ahead.
I said, though, we're going to wrap it up on that, actually. I got to really get dressed and get the hell up out of here and get to the airport. But I got that clear.
Hey,
I'm breathing right through.
Oh, speaking of which, before we go, I want to give a shout out to Delta. I lost my status this year because I didn't travel as much last year.
Yeah, same shit happened to me.
And I was platinum. So listen, Delta has a program called Reclaim My Status.
Word.
So if you apply for it and you can prove, I think I use like my insurance tax form for my insurance. If you can prove that you had like a life change last year, either you changed jobs, you had a baby, or some other, they list like what the categories are. They will restore your former status for 3 months. And if you can get back to your whatever status you get back to in that 3 months, you can keep like throughout. If you can get back to your old status, you keep it through the rest of the year. So I did it. They introduced it a while ago, but I waited till now because I have more travel coming up. So I applied like in the middle of the night, and when I woke up the next morning, I had been approved. So I got my platinum status back. Because let me tell you something,
it makes a big difference.
Traveling with no status, I had not had status in like 5 years. Like, that silver status don't do shit. I was like, pull child together. Yeah,
standing in the line.
Honestly,
you ain't getting nothing.
Not no upgrades, not no nothing.
I just pay for that extra. I pay for the poor man's first, man. That economy class. I just pay that $65. Because really, man, the reality is once you check a bag, man, nigga, you halfway there.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, so let me get on up to this airport.
Right.
We're going to wrap it up. We see y'all next week.
Next week is fourth, maybe not. But later, y'all.
We got the next.
Yeah. All right, later, y'all.
All right.
And that's what's popping in the world of entertainment. Thank you for listening to the Pop Life Podcast with Jeffrey, Naima, and Sean. Want to be a part of the show? We've got three ways you can get involved. Like us on Facebook. Send us your burning questions to poplifepodcast@gmail.com. And follow us on Twitter @PopLifePodcast. Talk to you next week.